This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
You are listening to the Crystal Palace Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins. I'm joined in the studio with the Back of the Nest podcast. Normally, the last few weeks, it's just been me and the brilliant DR Kernaz, but we are joined by the also brilliant Nick Gillard. Such a pleasure to have Nick back in the studio. For the next hour, we're going to be talking about the Palace and Brighton game, the one game they look forward to on their fixture calendar. Well, just as we were hearing that news, they had a few choice words about the game. You're going to be hearing those in the next few minutes, how they felt about last night's action. We will be talking to Harvey Jones, vlogger for 90 Minutes. He is joining us, the brilliant Harvey. He's going to be giving his take on last night's game and the season so far. They're going to look towards the next fixture with Newcastle. Matt Ketchell from BBC Match of the Day magazine will be joining us. Massive Geordie, I know what he'll have to say on the weekend's game. Newcastle, sort of in indifferent form. Someone who's not in indifferent form, Crystal Palace, who are now unbeaten in four games, maybe in different performance last night, the good, the bad and the ugly. We're going to have our say, but you can have your say. Tweet us at Love Sport Radio or call us 0208 7020 558. Well, DR, last week we talked to death, we chewed the fat on the Brighton game, what it meant, how massive it was, and I got to say, you told me until the hour mark you wasn't pleased, and that's putting it mildly.
Yeah, I was embarrassed, I'll be honest. I don't go to games and feel embarrassed watching my team play. Normally, I'm upset. But, I mean, the way that this was such a big game, and I actually predicted a loss last week on Love Sport. I think you remember, it was 2-1 Brighton.
And you've been on a run of good results of predictions.
Yeah, so, yeah, it ended. Thankfully, thankfully. I mean, yeah, because I expected this to happen. I mean, the first 60 minutes, we got outmanaged on a different level. I mean, they will go full at us. And you look at the position maps of their players compared to our players, it's just the difference in mentality and management. I mean, Brighton, as I said, they had their centre-back sometimes in our own box going forward, whilst we had our wingers defending for our lives in our own box. And I think Wilfried Zaha said it after the game that he felt tired at times because of how much defending that he had to do. And it was that type of game until later on Max Meyer came on and the game changed like that slightly. But the first 60 minutes, and even at halftime, when I was talking to other people, they were saying, why did I even come to this game? Because last season, we saw it two games against Brighton that we got outmanaged, but that was with Chris Hughton. This is a different manager, and the same thing happened. But then again, I think the draw is a massive result because we could have easily lost that game 2-3-0.
Well, DR says Brighton seemingly manhandling him. They have their number at the minute. Very strong words there, Nick. Strong words that I'm going to ask. Do you agree with the DR's opinion of the game?
Exactly. If it wasn't for the last 15 minutes, it would have been horrendous. I don't know what it is. Whether the players are nervous, because we gave the ball away a lot, and they know it's such a big game for the fans that actually, you know, it's different against playing Liverpool where you're not expected to get the result. Against Brighton, they want you to get the result.
The added pressure.
It's added pressure.
And the weight of expectation.
And I think that might have happened whether Brighton were up for it more. But you've got to remember, Jairo Riedewald has got a right coating on Twitter. And no, sorry, he was hobbling from about 5 minutes in. It's a wonder he lasted the rest of the half. Perhaps that's a bit poor from Roy for keeping him on when he was so injured. There was that tackle. I thought he was going to give away a penalty. But looking at the replay last night, it turns out that the Brighton player actually stepped on his foot and went over. So it was close. Makepeace back four. Remember, we went through that horrendous run of games and I said we might get a point. But don't worry, we'll be all right because we've got this easy run. We've got this injury crisis. Why can't we go like Leicester and go weeks without getting an injury?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about that.
I think maybe it's
out of our hands, really. But, I mean, you mentioned Jairo Riedewald, and that's a good point.
We spoke about him at length last week, didn't we? Someone who's forcing their way back into Roy's plans, now starting, DR.
Exactly. He started the game, but what Roy said after the game was that going up to this game, the plans was to start my left back, but the day before he injured his hip, and up until the warm ups he was not going to actually play, but he managed to still play 45 minutes. And some of the reaction that I've saw on social media relating to Jairo Riedewald is just shocking as well, because first of all, the man is not left back. I don't care if he played left back at Ajax in the Europa League final, because even when he did play that against Valencia, he was destroyed because he hasn't got the pace to play left back. And second of all, he was injured. I mean, we're playing someone who's not 100% out of position, and we're expecting him to do this, have this brilliant performance. So overall, I was just so annoyed by some of the reaction that I saw from fans relating to Jairo Riederwald and how he had a bad performance. But going into this game, I didn't even know that he was injured, and still I went with the mentality that he's playing out of position. He's not left back. I don't care if he's played there before.
When he was going forward, though, he played some really brilliant passes, really good incisive passes on the rare moments that we went forward. It was just, he was so lacking because he couldn't run.
Exactly. He's not 100%. I mean, what do you expect
from a player? Why was he starting him? Roy must have known that. Was that injury sudden? Where's it come from? Because obviously we spoke about the Watford game. It would seem a strange decision to start him if he was carrying a knock.
Well, what Jairo Riederwald said to Roy is that he is ready to play just before the warm-ups. So I guess that's more of Riederwald putting himself out there, because Riederwald is not going to get the chance. So if Riederwald says that I don't want to play, then he might not get his chance ever again, because before the Watford game he hasn't played in the Premier League for 2 seasons. So he has to put him out there, and that just shows like the lack of opportunities and lack of faith in certain players can lead up to this. I mean, he took him off at half time and we played James McArthur left back, but another player that we'll probably talk about more when we talk about the Newcastle game is Tyrique Mitchell, who is at actual left back, and he got injured in pre-season. But we're in an injury crisis. It is worrying because we've got these so-called winnable games. I'm doing the quotation marks.
Thank you for the radio listeners.
Yeah, exactly. They need to know that. Yeah. Winnable games. But as Nick said, we've got such a thin squad now, and it's crazy because every area we looked at, except for up front and maybe the right back, left back, we thought that we'd have enough depth. But look at it now, it seems like there's no one available.
We're lucky we've got James McArthur, such a utility player, in that we can slot him in anywhere. And he ran his socks off, and he went on a few overlapping runs at the end of the second half as well. It was brilliant.
Yeah, it's good to have players like James McArthur. You know, sometimes he gets underappreciated, his role or what he does to the team. And you see, the man can play anywhere you want him to play. That's why Roy probably loves him in the first place.
Roy does love him. Let's look at a few of the more positive spots, because I know you're not impressed with the 60 minutes. Obviously, Brighton having, dominating possession, having the chances. Mm. But someone who did put in an effort, and, you know, we've spoke about him at length on these shows, Benteke. I thought he was improved last night. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think what I've said with Benteke is that, first of all, what he needs to do is be confident in himself and take the shots.
It seemed like he had a little bit of that last night.
Yeah, he did. Mm. In the first half, I mean, everyone was struggling, and that includes Wilf, Ayew and Benteke, because I don't think they got the support that they needed. And the problem that I've had with Benteke, and I've said it here before, is the fact that I'm worried when he starts, because we automatically decide to hoof the ball up to him. And we saw lots of that in the first half. But the problem is, you got Wilf tracking back, you got Ayew tracking back, there's no one to head the ball up to. Mm. And that's why we couldn't keep possession. But I mean, when in the second half, especially when Max Meyer came on and Ayew shifted slightly more central, it was brilliant. I mean, their build-up play together was encouraging to see, because we've talked about Jordan Ayew, and he's gone a bit quiet recently in terms of scoring goals. I mean, his performance has been up there, but it was encouraging to see both Benteke and Ayew being on the same page. And first of all, Benteke taking shots and being strong on the ball.
He nearly scored from that cross / shot, didn't he, when he hit the woodwork? Was that a cross or a shot?
It was a cross, because it didn't appear.
It was a shot.
It didn't appear. Well, the Premier League have deemed it to be not a shot, because it didn't appear on the stats as being a shot at half.
That was our first chance. I think that was our first chance as well. First shot for a cross or shot.
Yeah. I saw a stat. I don't know if it's true, but it seems like it might have been. But we had 7 touches in their penalty area in the first half.
Did we? That's good. I thought we... I can't remember.
It felt worse. Yeah. Well, that's what I mean.
That's positive. I mean, I didn't know that we had a touch in the penalty area.
Well, DR's mood has obviously very quickly been lifted. Now he thinks it was a much better performance last night. But on that performance last night, see, when you hear stats like that, you do become more positive. Only Watford, who are bottom of the table, have scored fewer than Crystal Palace's 15 league goals. Mm. You know, obviously, the total number of shots this season, 161 for Crystal Palace. That is lower than anyone in the whole division. Yet, based on that goal stat, based on that shot stat, you are in the top half. So obviously doing something well. Is that pleasing, considering both those, you wish they were higher?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I've said it before. The difference is that the start of the season, especially not so much now, is the fact that we were scoring goals at home and we're taking chances, and we wasn't doing that last season. But as of recently, even that has kind of slowed down as well. We're not as clinical in front of goal. But of course, when you look at some of the teams that we played at home over the last couple of games, that's kind of understandable because there's been very hard competition there. But one player, I think we should talk about him. And we have to.
It feels a bit important, don't it?
Yeah. We have to guess. Max, well, you don't. You know who. Who made an impact? Who came on and made an impact and changed the game?
Can we talk about something else before we move on to him? Because we'll get all the negative stuff out of the way before we move on to the positive. Yeah. We won't sandwich the positive in between negative. We'll get the negative done.
Good idea.
Why was Moy allowed to run with a ball that much before he had a shot? Why were people standing off of him so much? What's going on there, D? Aren't we supposed to get in the way of those sort of things?
What's going on, DR? I mean, you coach.
Exactly. I was in midfield yesterday.
You win those battles.
One thing that I noticed was that there was gaps in midfield, especially in first half. I think it's more of, I don't want to say this, but I have to say it was more Brighton's geniuses, like of Graham Potter and him setting his team up. You could see it, like he drilled and played so well.
I know
well.
It hurts for you to say that.
Yeah, it hurts, but he drilled the team up so well, whether it's the fullbacks going up the pitch, whether it's the midfielders finding the gaps. I think it was just more Brighton being class.
Would you like him as our manager when Roy goes?
Oh, 100%.
No, come on. What are you saying that on, DR? Because what, this such a small sample that you're getting of him in the Premier League, you're basing his time in Sweden as well, because a lot of Brighton
Swansea
fans are saying
well.
But a lot of Brighton fans are saying that after that managerial merry-go-round, Brighton quickly gave him that 6-year deal. It might not work out, it's working at the minute, but to what level? Because they're playing that football, they're dominating possession, they're not winning games with it though.
Also, if they get any big players in, we don't know what it's like dealing with bigger players. Can he stand the personalities? There's no really big personalities at Brighton that I can see for him to kind of sort out. At Palace, you've got Wilf to sort out. He's a bit petulant at times. And, would he be able to cope with that?
All right, let's just say this. I want someone with his mentality because we've seen
creative attacking fluid football.
Yeah, with the players that we've got, because I genuinely believe that we've got more attacking players than defenders, and right now we're not utilising them in the best way. So whether that's Graham Potter or someone else, then but right now, as you said, I mean, that contract extension, looking at it from the outside, it came a bit too quickly. It's kind of weird, but I like his approach to the game.
Yeah,
that's
I understand
why I'd like
that. Forward thinking, this attacking offensive coach. You just mentioned sometimes Zaha being like a little bit petulant, the bigger dressing room egos that potentially someone like Graham Potter would have to manage. But Roy said last night, Wolf is doing extremely well mentally at the minute because things that happen in the game, taunts from the crowd, little fouls off the ball, he's not allowing them to upset him anymore, whereas before he has done. Do you think Roy is completely true there? Because sometimes Wolf can still
he's maturing, isn't he? I think, and he's learning not to let it get the better of him. Was it Bournemouth last season where they chanted about him crying and he did half a son and did half
well
a
he got picked to players. Pieces in the Watford game.
But he's still the old Wilf would have reacted much differently.
So think he is maturing then? Yeah, he is. Nick's right.
He is. I think he said it as well. What game was it? I think it was after the Burnley game where he came out and he actually said that, look, I understand. I need to just focus on myself. I can't focus on anything else other than myself because I keep getting distracted during the game. And you can notice it. Some games, that's why teams go and attack Wilf. All right, Wilf is a brilliant player. You understand
that.
They
know they can get to him through that way.
Yeah, they can get to him. I mean, there's so many other brilliant players which you go and attack
them. It's the chink in the armour.
Yeah, 100%.
There was a moment yesterday where he got fouled and he kind of lashed out a bit. The ref pulled him up and just had a bit of a chat with him. And I think the ref was actually saying to him, look, I'll stop them when they foul you. You just let me get on with my job and you play your football. And Wilf actually put his arm around the ref and then ran away smiling.
Yeah, exactly. But that's the old Wilf wouldn't have done that, though. Because we've seen it.
It might have been a different reply.
Yeah, we've seen that sort of spark of Wilf getting angry with the referees. And you know what? I always say this. Against the Watford game, Wilfred Zaha, I think he done the best he could because they were targeting him in a different kind of way. And, I mean, you have to have certain amount of patience to be able to not go and lash out. And sometimes he needs protection from the referees as well, because he's a human.
Absolutely. And he did lash out against the net, because what a beautiful goal that was. We haven't even spoke about that. But like I said, there's still so much more to come on the Eagle Show. And we will be talking to Harvey Jones, a vlogger for 90 Minutes, next.
For the fans, by the fans. Love Sport Radio.
You are listening to the Crystal Palace Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins. I'm joined in the studio with the Back of the Nest podcast, DR Kernaz and Nick Gillard. And no, we are not joined by James Howard tonight, but we want to give him a quick shout out. He's getting better. He's recovering. He's sorely missed on this show. James, we can't wait to see you in the new year. We hope you have a good Christmas and those Eagles come out flying for you. Well, someone who has joined us in the studio tonight. Remember, there's always time for you to get your Eagles views with us. Share them at Love Sport Radio, or call us 028 7020 558. I am joined once again by the fantastic Harvey Jones, vlogger for 90 Minutes. Harvey, always a pleasure to get you on the Crystal Palace Fan Show. Thank you for giving us a little bit of your time. 1-1 last night, but what were you making of it? Because DR says up until the hour mark, he was embarrassed.
Totally agree. I have to say the first half was the worst half of football I've seen us play this season, in my opinion. I think it was absolutely unforgivable the way we approached the game. It was clear after 10 minutes the game plan was to sit in, give Brighton the ball, allow them to dictate the tempo and play their style and look to basically break on the counter-attack. And I think especially after what happened last season, getting beat at, you know, the Brighton doing the double over us, I thought the one thing I was expecting last night was for us to come out of the blocks firing, to be flying into challenges, you know, make it a real battle and to show passion, show grit, show the fans that, you know, that they've got what it takes. And it was complete opposite of that. It was very timid, it was very slow, it was very lackluster, and it just felt like no one, it honestly felt like no one cared. And it really did anger me, especially as, and especially coming in at half time and then the players coming back out and starting the second half the same way they did the first. Didn't seem to be any sort of response to, you know, a few fans booed at half time, and in some ways I can understand that. It's incredibly frustrating when this is literally the only game of the season that most Palace fans care about, or if I say most, all Palace fans care about it, obviously, but it's the one game of the season that we look out for and we say, you know, we have to get a result on this no matter what. And they put out arguably the worst performance of the season for it, and it's incredibly frustrating, especially after what happened last season. So to see as a half seed do that fantastic solo effort and us getting a point out of it, I was extremely happy with the point because I didn't think we deserved it at all.
Harvey, I think the game changed after Max May came on. What do you think?
Totally agree, mate. I think that I think that Roy's decision there to bring him on was definitely the right decision, and it was great to see him play down the middle because Roy tends to like to bring Max Meyer on and play him out wide. I know he can play out there, but it's not his preferred position at Schalke. He likes to play anywhere along the centre midfield, really. And you can see how much more comfortable he is in that position. I think the first time he got on the ball, you saw him beat, I think it was Bissouma he beat with the ball, managed to dribble around him and then lay out a pass out wide. And it was a quick pass, you know. The whole game we saw sloppy passing, giving the ball away far too easily when we did have the ball. And also the actual passing was very slow, very lethargic. So when Max Meyer got the ball there, beat Bissouma, pinged one out wide and then started sprinting forwards, you know, it just immediately, he set the tempo when he came onto the pitch. And it just looked like he just gave an energy to the rest of the players, which I really think was the catalyst for what happened next. So I was extremely pleased to see him get a chance in the middle of the pitch where it's his best position. And hopefully he gets more game time going forward because I think he is such a talent and we haven't really used him to the best of his ability yet.
You're right. I'd say the catalyst, though, was Benteke hitting the post because that really lifted the crowd. And we were talking about it before the show about how much do you think the crowd lifted the team, because we did go quiet at times as a crowd, but once we'd hit the post, suddenly everything lifted and suddenly Palace seemed to think, actually, we can nick one here.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it literally came out of the blue. It was a fluke of a, I'm not going to say an effort, it was definitely a cross, but it was a fluke moment where it hits the post. And yeah, it was instantly, you just felt the fans start to build and start to, like, you know, here we go, this could, even though it's a fluke of an effort, this is something that could get the team going. I do agree with your point. I think the fans were poor, considering the game, the occasion. I was expecting more from us as fans. Equally, you can say live on a Monday night, you know, but in my opinion, I felt that against Brighton, there's no excuses from either sets of fans. You know, everyone should be up for it. But equally, you can say that the team didn't really give much for the fans to get behind, and they were, as I said, I would say again, they were incredibly poor, slow, lethargic, whichever word you like to use. And you know, that came across with the way the fans reacted to the performance as well. But absolutely, that was a massive moment, and that was obviously just before Maier came on. But I do think that Maier's influence on the pitch and actually showing some intent was a massive factor as well.
I was going to say that my man of the match actually was Ayew, though. Every week he just amazes me more. How does his ball stick to his feet, and he makes it look so easy, and it doesn't look like he should be able to get through these players, but they just can't seem to get near him. Yeah. No tricks or anything. He's just...
I agree. I think that his ball control, I think, behind Zahar is the best in the team. I think it's arguably he's better than Zahar in some aspects of his close control. And in the way he does beat players, and it just feels like the ball sticks to his feet, it's incredible, really, because we didn't see any glimpses of this last season during his loan spell. It really has come out of the blue this season. I did think he was wasted out wide yesterday, in all honesty. I think that we lost some of his intent off the ball with the way he presses the back line every week up front in that lone striker role. I did think Benteke actually played quite well yesterday in the sense that he won a lot of headers. He didn't really have players around him to run off of those headers, which was unfortunate. But I do think we lost a bit of the pressing ability up front and the intent off the ball with Ayew out wide. But I have to agree, I think that when he was on the ball, especially in the second half, he showed a lot in taking players on one-on-one, having that, you know, no fear approach to a game. And that's what you want to see, especially against Brighton. You don't want to see any players, you know, showing any signs of fear. You want to see them going at them and, leaving everything out on the pitch. And I think Ayew does that every week.
One thing that Nick mentioned was that he wasn't too sure if it was a big deal for the players and the nerves got to them in a game. What do you think of it? Do you think it was more of the players and the nerves getting to them, or was it just the tactics of Brighton?
I honestly not too sure. I do think that it pains me to say it, but you've got to give respect to Brighton in the way they approached the game. Their tactics worked very well. You have to say that, as we mentioned, that up until Zaha's equaliser, they definitely deserved the win. There's no doubt about that. I think that, you know, that has to be said, that they would approach the game very well, and we seem to struggle with their tactical approach. But equally, I can't help but think, even now reflecting on it about 24 hours after the game, you know, what in the week, in the build-up to the fixture, was being said, you know, by Roy in training, in the tactical approach. I'd love to know what was being said. You know, some of the senior players like...
Please don't get injured. That's all he was saying. Yeah.
Probably, you know, I wouldn't be surprised, with especially in defence, with the injuries we have. But, you know, players like Wilf, who's obviously been so experienced in this tie, Luca, as a warrior in the midfield, he's such a physical player, a captain of the team. You'd hope that these are the sort of players that will be stepping up, you know, for the players that are new to the team or haven't really experienced the fixture, giving them, you know, a lesson on what it means to face Brighton, letting them know this is the biggest game of the season, you know, you've got to step up for this. But it just felt like the team understood what it meant, which is weird, because so most of that team that played last night have played in a game against Brighton in previous seasons, you know, and that they should understand what it means and should realise it doesn't have to be the prettiest tactical performance. It doesn't have to be, you know, the most glamorous to watch. It's just got to be an all-out war, and you've just got to show more desire, more passion than the opposition. And that will be enough on the night for the fans to get behind you. And most times that will be enough to get the result over the line, showing that, you know, you've got more passion, more determination than the opposition. And it really just felt like we didn't have that, and that Brighton controlled the game tactically. And, you know, if we did have a bit more about us in terms of like the aggressive style of play and physicality, then I think a lot of the tactics go out the window.
Well, Harvey, DR mentioned that obviously Brighton seemingly a little bit at the minute, you know, they always put in this performance against Palace and Palace aren't quite matching it. You know, they have their number a little bit. And DR also said that, you know, Palace are crying out for a manager like Graham Potter, you know, someone who's forward thinking, who, you know, attacks on the front foot, you know, a very creative manager. Would you go along with that? Even though Potter, you know, is such a short stint that he's had at Brighton, you know, you'd want to see him, you know, cross that divide and be in charge at Selhurst Park.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that when the time comes that Roy does move on, which you'd expect wouldn't be in, you know, the too distant future. I think that is the sort of, Potter is the sort of manager I would definitely like to see coming into the club. You know, a young manager with that sort of style of play. I think we have got great players in the side, especially in the midfield. We've got players that like Max Meyer, for example, who, given game time, can create our chances, and we can, you know, create a bit more if we have a more attacking style of play. You've got to be wary, of course. You don't want to necessarily change things up and, you know, I refer back to like a West Brom or a Stoke. You change things up, you never know what could happen. It's very, very tight in the Premier League, and each team, you know, each team can win on any given day. So you've got to be wary of these things. But absolutely, I think that I don't think Roy should leave by any means. I'm definitely a supporter of Roy, and as frustrating as it is at times the way we approach certain fixtures, I think his ability to change up tactics for different opposition is quite poor, in all honesty. I do rate Roy and what he's done with the team on a very limited budget. I know he mentioned in his press conference about the owners splashing the cash in January and not saying we need more than just free transfers and loans in the upcoming January window, which I do like to hear from him. It's clear that he thinks we need more in terms of financial backing to improve the squad. But I think the fact he's done what he has on a limited budget with some of the players he has, I think he's done a fantastic job. And I think that, the way it's looking, we could have a very successful season if we keep it up the way we're going. The main thing is going to be injuries and how we deal with those injuries and the lack of depth now in certain positions. But obviously, once Roy does eventually leave, I do think that sort of manager, Graham Potter, would be a really good fit for us.
Yeah, it was really interesting to see what Roy had to say. We're going to be discussing that a little bit later, but always interesting as well to have you on, Harvey. Harvey Jones there, vlogger for 90 Minutes.
Thank
Brilliant.
You,
no, cheers, Harvey, for giving us a little bit of your time. Really like what he has to say, obviously, about the Eagles so far, and especially last night to Brighton 1-1. But Roy did make some very telling comments today. We're going to be talking about that, and also talking about a little bit of good news coming out of Crystal Palace.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
You are listening to the Crystal Palace Fan Show and Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins. I'm still joined in the studio with the back of the Nest podcast, DR Kernaz and Nick Gillard. We were just talking about the Palace-Brighton game 1-1 there, the spoils shared at Selhurst Park. The brilliant Harvey Jones, vlogger for 90 Minutes, just gave his take on the season so far. What is going right, what is going wrong, and the game last night. Fans feeling pretty annoyed, pretty embarrassed, especially for the first 60 minutes. We're going to be looking at the game of Newcastle on the weekend. But before that, Roy has made some very interesting comments at his press conference. A lot's being made of transfers, and apparently certain parts of this have been taken down by official channels, being clipped out, edited out, because he seemingly not had a dig at the owners, saying about he wants investment, he wants transfers. It's all quite a little bit a game of Cluedo here. We're going to do a little bit of Sherlock. And DR, before... Yeah, because Nick's going to read you actually what was said today, because we do have the full quotes. But DR, you was going to do a Roy Hodgson impression, and you was going to read it out, and then you bottled it.
Yeah, well, I was going to do it.
And Nick stole it off
you.
Yeah,
Nick, and it was a good idea, because we tried it beforehand. Yeah, it didn't quite sound like Roy Hodgson.
Okay.
It just sounded like an old grumpy man.
Well, that's not
Roy.
you can tweet us your views as well, what you made of Roy's comments. Tweet us at Lovesport Radio. Call us 0208 7020 558. Nick, before you read out that transcript, DR, what has gone on? Because editing it out, this is, you know, Roy speaking up, saying he needs investment. Do you know more of what's gone on today?
I love it. I mean,
it's brilliant.
Yeah, I love it. I love the fact that Roy Hodgson has come publicly. You know what? The fact that he has to come out publicly just shows that they probably have tried behind the scenes and he hasn't worked. I know Nick is going to read you exactly what he said, but just before when I read it initially and when I listened to it, because it actually got removed out the Crystal Palace TV. I think they clipped it out.
Which is unbelievable in this day and age, when you know that you know someone else is going to be recording it, someone else is going to write it down, because
and that is telling.
Lo and behold, we have it here.
That is telling, because Roy Hodgson, he's talked about it in summer. I remember after the Bristol City game where I was actually there, and he talked to the actual channel talking about transfers, because he has been public about transfers. He has been annoyed about it. And I feel like that was like a, oh, I've had enough, I'm just going to let it all out. And Nick, go on, tell us what he said.
You know what we are with the transfer market? We don't really go into the transfer market. I'm trying to persuade the American owners in particular that this is something we really need to do. I thought we needed to do it in the summer, but we didn't succeed in getting the players we thought were necessary to improve our squad then. Nothing has changed. It's still the same positions I'm talking about and would like us to much improve. Stephen and Doug, Stephen. You said he's older, instead of Steve Parrish. Stephen and Doug are very much on board with that. So I'm just hoping between us and the American owners, we'll find a way to release some money, because I don't think we'll find the quality we need with the free transfers and loans. He's got a point. We were a bit
That's
worried.
That's a good Roy Hodgson impression.
Oh, wow, that is so harsh on him. You're trying to sound like Roy.
No,
I was trying to sound like me. But a bit more Croydon than
Beckenham. I liked it. It was very more newsread. D.I., that's you. It's an insult from you.
Yeah, that wasn't Croydon. That was normal. That's not a Croydon accent. That's just a London accent.
Croydon accent.
A London accent.
What did you make of it then? Because he has spoken. He said, you know, Stephen knows of the position. Stephen, yeah. You know?
Do you think, were he not in the twilight of his career, he'd have gone and he's just seeing out?
It's a great question.
Yeah.
Because we've seen other managers go quite quickly, quite suddenly. I'm talking to
He's
a professional. He's a professional.
That's
true. I'm not too sure if he would.
He's honourable as well, I'd
say. Exactly. And it's his boy. I don't know if it's a boyhood club, but he's from Croydon.
And also, I think, and this isn't a knock on Roy, because you know from doing the show every week, I'm a big fan of Roy. But if he goes, where does he go? If he goes and he walks, because he is coming to the age, where else does he get a job? I don't know.
I think it's a bit different, of course, if he was, let's say, in the middle of his career. He's coming towards the end of his career. I think Palace is the last job. But I think the interesting thing out of this is the fact that he mentioned Doug Friedman and Steve Parrish, and he said that... Stephen Parrish. You know when you say Parrish? You don't get it. No, don't worry.
No. What?
You know when you say, oh, he's a parish of somewhere?
Yeah.
Stephen Parrish of Crystal Palace.
Yeah, in the parish of Crystal. Yeah,
parish of, is that how you say it?
I don't know. Okay. You're confusing me. Get on with it.
All right. Yeah. He said the fact that...
What's a real 1 minute we just had?
Yeah, exactly.
It's our Christmas special.
This
you're
is
really
our
a
Christmas
treat.
Special. I know. We've not made it very festive, have we?
Yeah, it's a bit... It's like 3-2. I mean, it seems like it's Roy Hodgson, Steve Parrish and Doug Friedman against American owners. And I think that's really telling.
Do you think that Stephen and Doug are on Roy's side? They agree with what he's saying.
Well, from the quotes, it seems like it, because he seems like, oh... Doug Friedman and Steve Parrish and me, we want to go out there and get the players, but the American owners, it seemed like they don't want to come out. And the fact that it got edited out of it, out of the official Palace channels, I think it's telling. And it's these American owners, we've talked about in the past and how they want to sell their stakes in the club. I think it has to happen sooner rather than later, because, like, jokes aside, it is getting a bit ridiculous in terms of, let's say in the summer we didn't sign another right back, and in January if we go and try get loan players and not get proper transfers in, then there's going to be a massive eruption between the fan base, because we've had enough.
Aside from that, and I'll come over to where we need to buy in the transfer window in a minute, but Patrick, who does our review show sometimes at backofthenest.com, he said when they first came in, what were the teams, the other teams owned? They weren't investing in their teams either, so he was a little bit worried that it was more of a, look at us, we own an NFL team, we own an NBA team, we own a Premier League team. So I don't know whether it was an investment to make us better or whether it's just an investment to say, look what we own.
Add into their catalogue.
Well, yes.
It seemed like they just came through the door and just walking out of it straight away. But it's like they went into a place and they're just not happy with it. This is not what I expected it to be, and just walking out.
It's looking like there's not going to be one buyer, but a kind of conglomerate of loads of different buyers, which I don't know how true it is. But
I don't know.
That's not ideal, is it, Nick?
But you don't want that. You want somebody, you either want a silent partner,
Exactly.
With loads and loads of money. Mm.
But then again, right now, Roy's coming out publicly, so it is quite important. Like, he's had enough of it. And, I mean, we're talking about a manager who has managed in all types of levels and has managed for longer than I've been alive. So he's gone through it all. And the fact that he has to come out and say this to the press just shows that in January, it's not looking nice. Like, the replacements that we've been talking about, right back and strikers and whatever, maybe we won't be able to get them. We won't be able to get the players that we need.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Obviously, talks of takeover, Roy wanting funds, obviously the clip by the official channel being edited out. Very strange goings on at Palace at the minute. What is your take on it? Tweet us at Love Sport Radio. Call us 0208 70 20 558. In other news, because this is a story that should be viral, it should be everywhere. Everyone should be talking about it, should be dominating, because we'll talk about the football, we'll talk about off-field, we'll talk about the owners. But in a story where, you know, we don't ever get to hear the good, something that Palace are doing, and it's absolutely incredible. They are offering the homeless a place to stay this winter. Selhurst Park being used as a shelter. They can have hot food, washing facilities. Once again, how good is that? And, you know, it feels like, you know, that should be what everyone's talking about, and they're not quite there.
I think it worked out last year when we done it. And it's so great to see from the club, because even coming here, I've walked past like two or three homeless people. So it just shows that there's a massive worry out there, and I don't want to get too political about it, but it's good from the club that they're actually offering their services, because they could have easily said, why should we care? I mean, they're not going to impact us in a positive way, but the fact that the club are putting the resources out there is positive.
Absolutely.
The Palace for Life Foundation also doing other good stuff. There was a documentary with Wilf last week, who's been working with a team called Divert. We've had Inspector Jack Rowlands on here before. He's a Palace fan. And it's getting people from the Croydon area who are caught up in knife crime, actually giving them opportunities. So there's quite a few being given a job at the club. You know, this we're going to give you an opportunity to actually make something of your life rather than go through the criminal justice system. So Palace are heavily involved in that, and have got lots of training schemes within the club, as well as helping put these people around to different places.
Absolutely.
I think it's very important in terms of where we're based in Croydon and how I've grown up there all my life. There's some serious stuff that goes on, and you could easily get lost like in system. And the fact that Palace are going out there and actually giving a hand to these players, to these people who before Palace's help may have had nothing, it's I'm proud of my club. And we talked about how the performance was embarrassing against Brighton, but I can happily admit that I'm proud of my club actually going out there and helping the people in need, because sometimes it gets really rough out there.
And also, you've got to give a lot of kudos to, there's lots of supporters groups now, Liverpool and Everton, I know, especially, before every game, collecting for food banks. And
Newcastle, you know, as well.
Yeah, so the football, the teams are becoming the hub again, which was getting lost, I think. Not so much for Palace, but other teams.
It's like what the game is about. I mean,
yeah, it's about the community.
Exactly, it's about the community and what you can bring to it as well.
Well, definitely glad we spoke about it. Should be getting more airtime, especially just before Christmas as well, such a crucial period. Well, we did mention the clubs that are doing it. Newcastle is one of them. Crystal Palace played him on the weekend, and we're joined by the fantastic Matt Ketchell from BBC Match of the Day magazine.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
You're listening to the Crystal Palace Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins. I'm joined in the studio with the Back of the Nest podcast, DR Kerners and Nick Gillard. We were just talking about the Brighton game 1-1 and the brilliant work Crystal Palace are doing in the community, giving homeless people a shelter and place to stay over this winter period at Selhurst Park. Brilliant work. But now, though, we turn our attention to the game on the weekend. It is against Newcastle, and I'm delighted to say a man I know well joins us now, giving us the Newcastle opposition view. It is Matt Ketchell from BBC Match of the Day magazine. Ketch, obviously not the result Newcastle wanted on the weekend against Burnley, but it has been better form of late. What are you making against the contest against the Eagles this weekend?
Well, hello Charlie, hello lads. Thanks for having us on. To be honest, I'm not very confident. Bit of an injury crisis going on at Newcastle at the minute. We had 10 out over the weekend, and I think when you take out Alec Saint-Maximin, who's definitely out for the game on Saturday, Almiron was missing for Burnley, and Shelby was missing for Burnley. You take those three out of our team, and we are very average. And it was shown against Burnley, who I think are very poor, and I think will flirt with relegation. We lost some key players, and it really affected us. Without those players, we're a very average team with an okay defence. So So Maximin will definitely not feature. He's got a bad hamstring. Shelby is 50-50, as is Almiron. So it kind of hinges on team selection for me. If those two, Almiron and Shelby, are available, I fancy us. Otherwise, I'm not too confident about us over Christmas. This is the one we need to win, though.
I find that kind of funny because we're going through injury crisis as well. At this point, maybe both our managers will be on the pitch on Saturday. Roy Hodgson versus Steve Bruce. That'd be different. Yeah. I mean, one weakness of Newcastle this season has been able to keep the ball. What can we expect from Newcastle on Saturday? Do you think they're going to go route one, or will they try to change their approach and try at least to keep the ball?
Oh, we don't want the ball. No, we hate the ball. We had 19% possession against Brighton when we played them earlier. So I think that was a new record. So we've got no interest in the ball. Again, it depends on team selection. If Almiron and Shelby are fit, then we're dangerous on the break. Almiron is rapid, and he'll probably put Atsu on the other side of Joe Linton, and it'll be a counter-attack job. So, and we are dangerous on the break. But it's kind of mad because the defenders get all the goals. So that we've got a £40 million striker who's got one goal. Almiron hasn't scored. So weirdly, you know, we're also dangerous at set pieces. If he goes with Carroll, then you know what you're getting. You're getting the ball in the air, and you're getting combat, and you're getting Carroll getting hold of the ball and linking up with, hopefully, Almiron, Atsu, and anyone else who can get up near him. So we're dangerous on the break, and we're all right at set pieces, and we don't want any of the ball.
You don't want the ball. We like to let the other team keep the ball. We're all injured. The managers are on the pitch. It's going to be an interesting game. I'm not sure if Andros Townsend is going to be fit. What sort of reaction will he get up there now, being an ex-Toon boy?
I don't know. That's a good question. I would say good because he came up and he did really well for us. And he was a good, honest player. And he scored some great goals. And he was the highlight of a pretty dark time for us. And we couldn't really blame him for leaving. He left when we went down. He was looking at the Euros, I think, and getting into the England squad. So we didn't really blame him. But I think what happened was he went to you guys after we went down and didn't do quite very well at the start. And we were a bit frustrated. We thought if he'd stayed with us and had a season under Rafa would have maybe made him a better player, and he maybe would have had as good a chance of getting into the England squad if he'd really turned it on, and he would have tore it up in the Championship, that's for sure. So I don't think we mind Andros at all. I think he's a good, honest lad and scored some fantastic goals, amazing free kicks and whatnot, and yeah, don't mind him at all.
He did say that he had an injury around that time. It actually changed the way that he had to play. I mean, he's adapted now, but it took him a couple of seasons to get used to that, and I think that's why he dropped out of the England team. So perhaps that's why there was that dip in form. We're lots of teams beating each other. What do you think the points will be for going down this year? Because I think there's going to be a lot of teams going to be near that bottom half because everybody's beating each other. You say about Burnley, you think they'll go down. They're getting results here and there. You're getting results here and there. Even Southampton are getting them now. Do you think it's going to be a lot closer than it has been?
Definitely, yeah. And I'm worried about us. I think we're going to be right in the thick of it come New Year because we've got you guys, which I'm not too excited by that prospect. I think I'd take a draw. Then we've got Man U away on Boxing Day. They're doing okay. Then we've got Everton, who could have God knows who in charge on the 28th. And then we've got Leicester at home. So I'm not too keen on those fixtures at all. So I think we could be in the thick of it. But we're on 22 points already. So it looks like it's going to be high. The only reason I say Burnley might go get involved is because I don't think they'll change their manager. And I always think that's worth about 6 points. And I don't think they'll ever get rid of Dyche unless he was to leave. So, and they looked terrible against us on Saturday. Didn't like the look of them at all. So, you know what I mean? There's a load of games to come over Christmas. There's a transfer window. It can all change. It's just a weird season. Like we've lost to Watford, Brighton, Villa. We drew with Brighton. We've lost to some really bad teams, but we've beaten the so-called stronger teams. So it's just really hard to call. It's going to be interesting, and I don't think we're out of it at all.
When Steve Bruce joined the club, the perception, especially looking from the outside, it seemed like Newcastle fans just didn't want him. It seemed like they didn't really welcome him with open hands. They weren't keen on him. I mean, you mentioned it. You have 22 points, sitting in 11th place. Has that changed? Are Newcastle fans more going on his side now, or is it still the same? Want Steve Bruce really. No matter what.
So you're Palace fans. You've had Steve Bruce at your club. What is there to like? What is there to get excited about with Steve Bruce?
I've seen the best football Palace have ever played in 44 years. I've been going under Steve Bruce. There was one game, it was in the Championship. We played against Norwich and Norwich were good Championship side then. They couldn't get near us. We were absolutely brilliant. And then he said, oh, I'm going to join Birmingham. But it turned out all right in the end because we got AJ out of it. But he's not favoured that well. One of the greatest moments at Palace is just watching Steve Bruce staring at the ground while we beat his whole team 4-0. That was brilliant in the rain. Just watching him looking down, looking so sad. But, you know,
well, this is the thing. He's managed so many clubs. The fans of these clubs, no one really seems to have a positive. That's probably one of the first positive words I've heard a fan of one of his previous clubs say about him. No one's got a positive word to say about him. And we were more bothered about the fact that we had a world-class manager in place who was looking for an excuse to stay, and Mike Ashley offered him worse terms to stay on for another 3 years. And who in their right mind would accept that? So we were more disappointed in that. And then we went down the shopping list of managers, starting at the likes of, you know, Roberto Martinez, Vieira, Arteta. They all didn't want to know. Even Allardyce knocked it back. And you started to go really down the shopping list. And you arrive at Steve Bruce, who couldn't get Villa out of the Championship, was struggling with Chef Wed mid-table, and all of a sudden, Ashley and Lee Charney think he's the man to take us forward. That's what we were getting at. It was just a completely, you know, massively... It was just a classic Ashley doing it on the cheap, and that's what we didn't like. But I work at football, and sometimes we interview footballers. They live in a bubble. So these footballers in Newcastle, they go into training, and they're not aware of all the negativity, and they're not aware of all the social media backlash and anti-Ashley this and that. Instead, they get in, they get their head down, they work hard, and they're working for someone who they probably like. I think he's a likeable guy, Steve Bruce, and his experience, he knows how to talk to players. And I think it's just, there's a lot of spirit about our team, and I think we've had a little bit of rubber the green here and there, and there's a good spirit about the players, a lot of honest players in there, and that's got us to probably where we deserve to be, which is just below mid-table.
Well, unbelievably, even though Nick said that he's seen the best football, which was under Bruce Ketch, I can't quite believe it. I'm still stunned at that. I know you're going to have some fun on that one. What is your score prediction quickly for the weekend?
Honestly, I think Palace will beat us by 2-1, 1-0. I don't like the look of us. It depends if Almiron and Shelby are fit. If they're fit, then I would think we might get a draw of it. But if they're not, and we've got Carroll and Atsu and players like that, and we lose all the zip and character, and I don't like the look of these Christmas fixtures. So I'd take a draw now, to be honest, after what I saw against Burnley on Saturday. So I'm going to give it to you guys, I think.
Well, Ketch, you're a mainstay on the Newcastle fan show, but I think if it ever goes the wrong way, you've got a seat on the Palace fan show with that prediction. Ketch, always good to hear from you. Matt Ketchell there from BBC Match of the Day magazine and part of the Newcastle fan show. I quickly turn my attentions to you. Nick, I'll start with you. How do you think it's going to play out, and what's your score prediction?
One goal in it, as Keck said, but it'll be 3-2 Palace.
3-2 Palace, so 2 Palace DR. Where will the game be won and lost for the Eagles, and your score prediction?
You've got lovely Just Do It top there. I'm going to do it. 1-0 Palace, Luka Milivojevic. It inspired me. Yeah,
inspired,
I'm positive, yeah.
Well, DR, your predictions are always inspiring because you normally get them right. This is the last Crystal Palace fan show of the year and of the decade, unbelievably, yeah, if you look at it like that. But we are back the first week in January to talk all of the Crystal Palace goings-on over Christmas. What a season and a year we've had doing the Crystal Palace fan show. With the back of the Nest podcast, Nick Gillard, DR Kernes, Chris Hambo, James Howard, Max Matthews, Harvey, all of you that joined and listened, we will see you in the new year. But I think the last word goes to you two. How are you going to end it?
Quick. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, yes.
All right, I was expecting him to go, Eagles!
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.